Well, good morning, TNC family. I'm so glad you're listening today from wherever you are, home or an apartment or a hiking trail or a sidewalk or a car or a chair or a couch or a bed. It's been another unusual week in our country and world as we are still in the middle of this coronavirus era. But it's also been another week of each of us finding creative ways to connect, receiving and sending hundreds of texts and FaceTiming and talking multiple times on the phone. And around here, we've had WebEx small groups and Zoom chats and conference calls. And we are all together reading daily through the New Testament Gospel of Mark. Mark, who was a co-worker and friend of the Apostle Peter and the Apostle Paul. And I hope you've been participating in these daily readings. As I mentioned last week, there's an early church historian, Papias, who suggested that Mark met with Peter in Rome and wrote down story after story after story from Peter's eyewitness experiences with Jesus. And then arranged these Jesus stories into his account, his gospel, his biography of Jesus. In other words, Mark didn't just randomly throw these stories together or just take straight dictation from Peter, but rather he shaped the story. And I love that he did that because Mark was obviously not Jesus, and Mark was not part of the inner circle, one of the 12 disciples of Jesus. It's like he's not Kevin Bacon. He's not 1 degree from Kevin Bacon. Mark's like 2 or 3. He may not be mailroom, but he's not boardroom either. And I love it because the most interesting and often the most unbiased biographies are the ones written by the second level people. Because when the people at the top tell their story, it's often careful and agenda-filled and reputation-crafting because they have a lot to lose by being completely transparent, and it compromises what they put on the page. But the story written by the person 2 floors down, 2 degrees removed, the person you've never heard of until you read the story, that person has a lot less to lose. And so the reading is a lot more real and a lot more helpful. And so I love that we're reading together from the book of Mark. And today, I want to teach for a few minutes on another storm story that he tells. Last week we explored the storm in Mark chapter 4 and then talked about the coronavirus storm and the accompanying fear storm. But if you're paying attention, then you know that this era that we are living in has more than just these 2 storms. Because there is also the storm of lost income and lost employment. The storm of isolation and aloneness. The storm of boredom. The storm of working in close proximity alongside your spouse or family member in ways you've never had to before. The storm of staying at home with kids 24/7, figuring out online school with them, becoming full-time cafeteria manager, school teacher, and referee. And so I want to speak into these storms today through a second storm story that Mark tells in chapter 6. Beginning in verse 45, where Mark tells us that after a long and miraculous day of teaching and feeding and serving a huge crowd of people, Jesus insisted that his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. Verse 46, after sending the crowd off, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat with the disciples in it was in the middle of the lake, and he, Jesus, was alone on land. Verse 48, and Jesus saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind had come up against them. Another translation says, he saw them struggling with the oars. Another one, he saw that they were in serious trouble, rowing hard and struggling against the wind and the waves. And so the text says, shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake. Verse 49, he was about to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost, and they cried out because they saw him and were very afraid. Immediately, Jesus spoke to them and said, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. Verse 51, then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. The story, of course, is centered around a storm. But I want to say at the outset that even though this story is centered around a storm, it is not a story about storms, because the storm is not optional in this story. This is a story about what you do when the storm comes, about what you do in the middle of your storm. So let's walk back through the story, and I want to highlight three truths that I believe Mark wants us to understand and consider and talk about and meditate on and apply. And here's the first, number one. Mark wants us to know that Jesus sees you in your storm. Verse 48, Jesus saw the disciples straining at the oars. He knew they were having a hard time. And part of what Mark wants us to understand is when our storm comes, God sees, God knows, God cares. That it's true what we learn elsewhere in the scriptures, that not a single sparrow can fall to the ground without God caring. It's true, even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. It's true. He even tends to the lilies of the field. And so you can be certain that Jesus sees you in this storm. But it's worth considering not just that he sees you, but considering also what it is that he sees. Because often what Jesus sees is different from what you and I might see in the storm. For example, in the story just before this, in Mark chapter 6, 5,000 plus people are hungry, and Jesus tells his disciples, look around, see what you can find. And they look around and they come back to Jesus and they say, we've found, seen, identified 5 loaves and 2 fish. What do the disciples see? 5 loaves, 2 fish. But what does Jesus see? Answer, enough food to feed 5,000 men plus women and children. Ben Zander is the music director of the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra, And in his book, The Art of Possibility, he tells the story of two British salesmen in the early 1900s who traveled to Africa to see if there was any opportunity for selling shoes in the particular country they visited. And they wrote telegrams back to Manchester. One of them wrote, "Situation hopeless. Nobody wears shoes." But the other salesman wrote, "Glorious opportunity. Nobody wears shoes." And Jesus sees the storm and he sees his disciples struggling. And while they may only feel the wind, Jesus sees the possibility. Hey, I bet Peter could learn to water walk in this. Hey, I'm pretty sure these disciples are about to discover that they have more strength for their struggle than they think. See, Jesus understood what Scottish mathematician William Thompson would articulate 2,000 years later, which is, when you are face to face with a difficulty, you are up against a discovery. In other words, there are things you will learn in the storm that you can learn in no place else. And if you're a wise parent, then you already get this, which is why you let your children struggle sometimes. Because when times are tough, when conditions are at their worst, that's when we learn what we're truly capable of. It's why my favorite teacher in high school, Mr. Ratzlaff, he was also my hardest teacher. I took geometry and precalculus and computer programming from him, and they were hard classes. And like 100% of the time, when I asked him a question, he would not answer until he had seen me struggle. With no live sports on TV these days, my reading pace has like doubled, and I finished last week Howard Schultz's book, Pour Your Heart Into It, How Starbucks Built a Company One Cup at a Time. It's a hugely inspirational book because it's a book about growing up in horrible poverty and about perseverance and drive and struggle and rowing hard against the wind and visiting thousands of coffee shops all over the world and rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection. And Schultz writes at one point, "I was not just an underdog, I was an underdog. I felt as if I were being kicked and beaten every time I scratched on another door." Bear Grylls, the former UK Special Forces and host of Man vs. Wild and Get Out Alive, writes, "I've learned if you find a road without any obstacles, it does not lead anywhere worthwhile." Which I think is why on October 29, 1941, as Britain was in some of its hardest and loneliest days of World War II, Churchill told a generation of people in a famous radio address that, quote, "These are great days, the greatest days that our country has ever lived." And so, new community, the question for us is, will you do the hard work of figuring out what it is you can discover in this era? Because this could be a breakthrough era for some of you. Like, what might you discover about humility or patience or about the power of forgiveness or about the value of diet and exercise and sleep or about friendship and prayer and love? See, Mark wants us to understand that Jesus sees the storm and he cares. And he lets them struggle. Because he sees that in their struggle, they are up against their greatest discovery. Second, the second truth I believe Mark wants us to consider and talk about and meditate on and apply is this. Jesus did not cause the storm. The text says Jesus saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. And Mark's wording is very important because if Jesus had caused the storm, Mark would have said so. He would have written something like, Jesus saw the disciples straining at the oars because God had caused the wind to be against them. And in fact, in the time of Jesus, many people still thought that sickness, handicap, misfortune, plague, disease, natural disasters were caused by God or by the gods. It's actually a very ancient belief, which you can read about in Job chapter 4 and Job chapter 8. And you can also find this idea in extra-biblical sources as well, the belief that the gods were responsible for everything, which is why they had rain gods and harvest gods and fertility gods and sea gods and sun gods. It is not surprising that there were thousands of deities in ancient culture. And they believed that everything that happened was controlled by the gods, and therefore that misfortune was a god's punishment. And these ideas were alive in Jesus' day. In fact, John chapter 9 records that one day, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus responds, neither one. Because sometimes storms will just arise because we live in an imperfect world. But please, let's be clear. When a storm or a virus arises, it is not God's arbitrary punishment toward a people for their bad behavior. And I hope you've sensed this as we are reading through the entire book of Mark this month. It's the exact opposite of Jesus to cause a storm. Jesus heals a man with leprosy, heals a man who's paralyzed. He feeds the hungry, comforts the widow. He calms two storms, doesn't cause them. He drives out evil spirits. He comforts those in pain, raises a dead girl to life, heals a sick woman, restores hearing to a deaf man, and on and on and on. And nowhere do you get any image of God bringing calamity. In fact, Peter outright denies and denounces and disparages Jesus three times. And do you know what the result was? Jesus forgives him three times. There's simply no evidence that Jesus, or the God that he came to show us, punishes people with plague, drought, death, or disaster. And so we need to stop blaming God for things that have clear natural causes. Further, when people quote random sentences tucked away between chapters of paragraphs written 3,000 years ago, we need to be familiar with the context of the text and the culture it was written in. Because I've seen the passages that some are throwing around these days on Facebook and Twitter. And I can assure you, they are taking passages of Scripture and are ripping them out of context. And if you want to play that game, then you end up with the same logic that said the Bible prohibits tattoos and jewelry, and a woman must never wear pants, and we should stone to death rebellious children. By the way, if you want to understand more clearly how to read texts that seem to indicate that God brings calamity, then I would highly recommend two books by Professor John Walton. The Lost World of the Torah and Ancient Near Eastern Thought in the Old Testament. Friends, Jesus simply did not cause the storm on the Sea of Galilee. And there is no evidence that God, in some punitive or angry way, sent us a virus or a disease or a hurricane or any illness in our era. First, Mark wants us to understand, Jesus sees you in your storm. And in fact, sees possibilities in it. Second, Mark wants us to understand, Jesus does not cause the storm or the damage that comes with it. And finally, the third truth that I believe Mark wants us to consider, talk about, meditate on, apply, is this. Jesus promises to give you peace in the storm. Verse 49, he came out to them on the water. And when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost and cried out because they were very afraid. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." Verse 51, then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. Now, remember, Mark's gospel was driven by the testimony of Peter. Peter was the one telling Mark about this story so that Mark could write it down. But Mark arranges and decides what to put in. So, watch this. Now, watch this. Pay attention. Listen. Matthew also has a biography of Jesus. And Matthew also tells this exact same story, only Matthew included something that Mark left out. Matthew 14 tells the same story, but there is one part of the story that Matthew mentions, but that Mark does not. And what is left out is, Matthew tells us that when Jesus comes out to them on the water and says, "Don't be afraid, it is I," Peter replies, verse 28, "Lord, if it's you, tell me to come out to you on the water." Verse 29, "Come," Jesus said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink and cried out, "Lord, save me." Verse 31, and immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught Peter. Now, Matthew's account is the one that we're most familiar with and that pastors most often preach about and write books about, because Peter gets out of the boat. Because Peter doesn't ask Jesus to calm the storm. He asked Jesus to call him out on the water in the middle of the storm. Peter doesn't ask for an improvement in the conditions. The storm still rages. What Peter says is, tell me to come to you, make a request of me, and I will obey. And in stepping out, we like to preach, Peter is demonstrating faith. But this Peter walking on water story is not in Mark's account, the one that is recounted by Peter himself. I'm saying when Mark writes his gospel, he skips the Peter part. So why does Peter walk on water, and when it comes time to tell Mark the story, he leaves it out? Or at least Mark chooses not to tell it. I've been thinking a lot about that this week. Some might suggest, well, it's because Peter's embarrassed by verse 30 when he loses faith for a moment and starts to sink. But if you know Peter, then you know Peter's personality is not to be embarrassed. And so I thought this week, maybe it's because Mark wants us to know that sometimes the more significant response in a storm is the willingness to stay in the storm and keep rowing hard against the wind in the middle of the storm, instead of simply trying to escape it. To stay faithful, to stay honest, to stay generous. Maybe Mark wants us to consider that the real task is to stay faithful in the storm. But I think there is perhaps a third reason why Mark leaves out the Peter walking on water part. And I think maybe it's because Mark wants us to focus on the main thing and not the minor thing. Mark tells us, verse 49, when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him. Verse 50, immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. Verse 51, then he climbed into the boat with them. Mark wants us to know it's not as significant what happened when Peter climbed out of the boat as what happened when Jesus climbed in. That the thing we should most celebrate is not that Peter got out of the boat, it's that Jesus got in to the boat. It's that no matter what storm you are in, you don't have to be anxious. You don't have to be anxious in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a financial setback, or in the middle of a physical problem. You don't have to be anxious that Little League is canceled and Major League Baseball is postponed, or the NBA season is in doubt. You don't have to fret over that canceled birthday party, that postponed vacation, or that physical distance between you and a loved one. You know, sometimes it's hard to tell if you are a peaceful person if what goes on around you is always perfect. Sometimes the only way you can know and grow into a person of peace is to have the peace of Christ in the middle of a storm. It's to learn, hey, the wind is still beating against this boat, but Jesus is in the boat with me. Jesus is sheltering in place with me. Jesus is here. And I think Mark writes this second level story because he wants you to know that you can be a woman of peace, a man of peace in your storms. My prayer is that we would know the one who sees us in the storm and who is with us in the storm today. Amen.